Welcome to our podcast, Life's Learning Curve. This will be episode 23, and we're in season 2. And we couldn't be more torqued about this whole thing, right, Sebastian?
Torqued as an overreaction, right?
Right. So, Life's Learning Curve podcast. Every once in a while, I like to take a step back and just tell you what this is. As we retell our true-to-life stories here at Life's Learning Curve, it feels like it really might be from another era. It's not trivia, it's not fads, but on the other hand, we mention records, music, TV, and the family as they were the things that greatly impacted us. You know, these are the stories that no one actually believes happened. You come home and tell the story and they go, "Ah, it didn't happen." That's us. We look to pinpoint the years and the people and the events that made us the people we are today. Find us at lifeslearningcurve.org and subscribe. On today's show, torqued and overreacting.
Honestly, if I could grow grass in the gravel or the quarter inch, I'd be happy. But soon Tad returned just outside my back door, and he didn't even knock. He just stood there and yelled quite loudly, and he yelled, "You happy now? You happy? Huh? Huh?" He turned and walked away.
Okay, listeners, I'm glad you're here with us today. You're in for a top-notch episode. People who overreact.
What?
Overreactors. Not just others, but me too. I'm guilty of this myself. We'll hear about a parent that overreacted just to entitle their child. And another story about a man who struggled through his life because he couldn't turn off his overreactions to his business. Plus, a whole lot more. Let's roll. This is Life's Learning Curve. I'm Paul Hart. Coming up, torqued. Stand by. Overreacting. Bah! It was a year after my mom had passed away from an extended bout with cancer, and we had just completed building our modest home on the east side of town here in the mid-Midwest. For a year, we tried to grow grass, and we tried to fill in holes that made small lakes in the yard when it rained.
No grass.
Plus, the added fill to our lot was done by trucks dumping gravel and dirt and asphalt chunks from a nearby road construction project. Now, this fill did raise our lot, but it also forbid us to grow grass. We tried. Grass just wouldn't grow, and there'd be a little bit here and there. No plants would grow either. The fill was bad. Bad fill.
Bad fill?
The yard needed some quality black dirt and a small grader to help make it look less like an abandoned lot with a new house on it. So I decided that the inheritance I received from my mom, I would use that to landscape our lot, bring some people in, buy some dirt. It was our future home in which we would raise our kids someday, and so we wanted a lawn, not a dangerous gravel pit. My mom had loved her yard and the fresh smell of cut grass, tulips, flowers. We had a nice lawn and a nice yard. That's what I grew up with. So, I wanted a nice lawn too. A friend of a friend, probably of a friend, recommended us to a guy just starting up a landscaping business. His name was Tad. Now, Tad was a guy in his mid-50s and was a robust, kind of ruddy-looking guy that had a friendly but very direct approach about his work.
Tad.
As I walked through my gravelly yard with Tad that first time, he told me, "Hey, man, I can have this place looking like a national park if you let me.
Tad.
I will add 4 to 6 inches of black dirt to your entire yard. Entire yard. And I'll build you 3 berms over there for flower beds. It's going to be swell." Now, those words, national park, stuck in my head. I pictured rolling hills and sweeping berms filled with flowers and green, green grass. Nice. We took 3 other landscapers' estimates as well, just to be sure. But, you know, that national park thing stuck in my head. So I decided on Tad because of the reference and his confidence.
Tad.
We paid half what we owed up front after we were given our invoice for the work to be done. The work would begin in 7 days.
7 days.
But Tad showed up in 8 days. It was a day late. Now, I called Tad that first day, but I didn't get an answer.
8 days.
The next day, Tad and his crew of 5 men did show up at 7 a.m. in the morning. It was a beautiful June day, full of sun, puffy clouds, great weather. It was June. Tad told me,
I couldn't harness my crew yesterday. They're visiting relatives out of the country, so I got these guys.
Harness a crew?
Okay, I thought.
Okay, right. Let's go.
A large dump truck dumped fresh dirt in small piles all over our gravelly yard. Black dirt. Nice. And I watched as the men worked hard to spread the dirt and sculpt it into rolling hills. Tad supervised the men.
Look at them, bro.
6 or 7 times that day, Tad came to my back door to tell me,
you know, I've got to stay on these workers' backs. They're slow and they're lazy. You know the type, right? It's their culture to be that way. I got to stay on them all the time.
Working really hard.
Now, I thought that was an odd comment. I'd been watching. I was pretty excited about this project. I watched the whole day. I never saw any slowdown or any leaning on shovels or any addled work ethic from any of these men. But I did see Tad turn bright red in the face as he screamed,
speed up! Speed up! Get moving!
The men were already moving. But that was not the thing that bothered me the most. I noticed that the 2 small graders and the dump truck Tad used were brand new. They weren't just like used and they'd been washed and really spit and polished up. They were brand new. They were just off the delivery truck, shiny, unscratched, as were the shovels and all the tools. They were just purchased. Some had price tags on them still. There were no names or words on the trucks. Everything was new. Could this be Tad's first job, I thought? Maybe. I don't know. The work was progressing nicely, though, and my anxiety lessened. So we watched all day. My wife and I watched the work progress from inside the house. Now, after 1/3 of the yard was completed, they started at the back and was moving toward the front. After 1/3 of the yard was completed, my father stopped by. That was great. And he pointed out to me something. He walked around a bit and said Tad was not adding the 4 to 6 inches of dirt to the yard anywhere, as Tad had told me he would do. Also, my father pointed out that there were about 8 or 9 places in the far backyard he had added no dirt at all, mostly behind the garage where I couldn't see. And there was just gravel exposed, no topsoil. My father was not an instigator by any means. He never was, but he definitely expected complete value for what was being paid for. I watched as Tad told his workers to leave certain areas exposed. I kind of listened in and I heard Tad say,
that's money lost for me, my friends. Money. You know what that is?
Tad explained, but he said it in their native language. My father advised me to go out and talk to Tad. This project was passionate to me, not only because of the investment, but because it was something that I knew my mother would have wanted me to do with my inheritance. Very simple. As I approached Tad, I asked,
hey Tad, why is there still exposed gravel in the completed area of the backyard?
Tad stopped and he squinted at me. There was a pause. Tad was one of those guys that looked like he was smiling when he squinted. You ever seen one of those guys when their eyes are in the sun, the bright sun makes you squint? And it also makes the corners of the person's mouth turn up, so as they squint, it looks like they're smiling. The corners of his ruddy cheeks looked like he was grinning at me. It was disarming at first, but then I realized it, Tad was just a squint grinner.
What do you mean?
Asked Tad. Wasn't really comfortable with that response. And I said,
you said you'd add 4 to 6 inches of dirt to cover the entire yard so I could get grass to grow.
No, I didn't. Your yard is to grade at level right now.
That's the way it's going to stay.
I returned with Tad's contract, which said
the contract.
4 to 6 inches of soil, black dirt, would be added to the entire yard to facilitate grass and shrub growth. That's what it said right in the contract. Not just to certain places. There was a pause again. Tad chose to turn around and walk away from me. I did feel angry, but I did not get angry. I gave Tad the benefit of the doubt, and I assumed he would make the adjustments. Inside again, my wife and my father watched as he got the men together, and they worked to cover the gravel with what I would call a small film of black dirt, I mean less than a quarter inch. Honestly, if I could grow grass in the gravel or the quarter inch, I'd be happy. But soon Tad returned just outside my back door, and he didn't even knock. He just stood there and yelled quite loudly, and he yelled,
"You happy now? You happy? Huh?
He turned and walked away.
Torqued.
I saw him pace back and forth angrily in my yard, and my wife, my father, and I all decided Tad needed to cool down for a while.
What am I gonna do now?
None of us were going to go out until we saw that happen. So we all stood inside and began to understand that this guy might be overreacting to the request.
Tad.
The contract. Now, I did not hear from Tad for the next 2 hours. No knocks on the back door. But we all watched the work continue. It progressed. We watched from inside the house.
Looks good out there.
Around 2:30 p.m., Tad knocked on my back door. And he asked me to come outside.
Can you come out here?
And Tad looked me in the eye and said,
"I need more money."
Why? What's the reason?
And Tad said,
"This is a big job, Paul, and I have to pay these guys, you know."
I replied,
"Tad, you measured the square footage and gave me a total final price quote. Where are you coming up short? Is it in materials or labor or what?"
At that point, Tad threw down a shovel and he screamed.
"I don't have to tell you my business. I don't have to. You don't understand anyway."
Dork.
Then Tad yelled,
"Okay, everybody out of here. Adios, let's go. We're done here."
"Mr. Tad, we leave.
I need
the workers looked confused. I was surprised. That's not the strongest word I could use, but I was surprised.
"Mr. Tad, we leave."
They all gathered their shovels and took the graders out to the street.
I
said, "Tad, tell me what's wrong. You and I have a contract. You need to finish this, right? You seem to have enough dirt already. It's dumped in small piles from the dump truck all over the yard. So we have enough materials to finish." And Tad stopped. He turned and looked over his shoulder, and he shouted,
"I'm not taking orders from you, buddy."
"Don't have to."
And I said,
"You're breaking a contract, man.
Don't have
Listen,
to.
Why can't you just finish what's left? You know, you got the front yard."
"I don't have to do anything."
Tad yelled,
"I have to pay these workers? You don't understand work. You don't understand what it's like to own a business.
Don't have to.
You don't understand how hard it is that I have to kick these guys hard in the rear end to make them work. I want more money."
Tad, our contract says you're going to do this job for the amount that you quoted us. Nothing extra has been added today, so I expect you to abide by the contract."
And then Tad threatened,
"I'll take it to court. I bet you won't."
And he stuck his finger in my chest.
Uh-oh.
As a teacher, we're masters of de-escalation. I said, probably something he didn't expect. I just said,
"Let's try and find a solution, Tad."
I said,
"What?"
Tad said,
"Let's finish. I'll help you guys. Give me a shovel."
Now, at the time, my neighbor Dennis had come home from work for the day. He lived right across the street. He heard the commotion, and he witnessed the legal threat.
"Hello, gentlemen."
Dennis was a practicing small claims attorney. Dennis slowly came over, and he quietly took Tad aside, and he spoke to him. I didn't hear what they said. I saw Tad look to the ground as if he were being scolded.
Tad.
All I can say is that Dennis never had to identify himself as a lawyer. The work was finished that day, cleanly and efficiently. Later that evening, I asked Dennis.
Hey, what was it you told Tad to make him stabilize and calm down and complete the job?
And Dennis told me,
Paul, I just talked to him like I talk to my own kids at home. They're 7 and 9, you know that. I told him, Tad, I know there's things we all don't like to do in life, but we have to do them. And it would be in your best interest today to complete this contracted job to the very best of your abilities. Let's make the neighborhood and your family proud of the work that you did today. Wouldn't it be nice to come home happy?
Yes, it would.
In a postscript, I have to say, I had my neighbor Dennis over for quite a few cookouts that summer with his family. And it turned out that Tad had tried many businesses in his past, but his temperament and overreactiveness and his inability to manage his workers always destroyed all the forward motion in his businesses. A month later, grass grew in my yard and we had our green lawn. We had 8 gravelly patches where grass still would not grow, but it was no big deal. A few bags of dirt from our local home store solved that problem. As for Tad, he kind of disappeared off the grid until one morning. It was early fall, and I had gotten up early, and I looked out of my kitchen window. It was maybe 6:30 in the morning, and I saw a plump and ruddy-looking Tad running through my backyard, taking photos of his work, which he posted on social media. Tad even made up a false name for me on social media. Tad posted photos of the completed grassy sculpted yard. It looked nice. It did. I was listed not by my real name, but he said I was
Joe Johnson, satisfied customer.
Air quotes.
Joe writes,
Tad and his crew were prompt and professional.
Was the comment Joe Johnson had made about the work.
Absolutely, that's us.
Sometimes it's best just to let it go. Overreacting.
Overreacting.
This one has to do with education. I taught across the hallway from a great friend of mine and an excellent educator, which I'll call John Lenz for the podcast.
John Lenz.
John was a good teacher. He was a great teacher because he loved teaching. It was a happy place for him, and it was his place to share stories and learning with his students. And his students really liked him and allowed the students to embrace technology and everything else he brought into the classroom. One school year, John and I were told by one of my students that one of his girls was saying some negative things about Mr. Lenz, John Lenz. I'll call the student Keisha, not her real name. So just to make sure all was okay, John spoke to Keisha and she just shrugged and said,
"No, everything's okay, Mr. Lenz."
But it wasn't. Now, these were 11-year-olds, and apparently Keisha wanted to be in the same classroom as her best friend down the hall. So to make this happen, Keisha decided to tell her parents things like,
"My teacher makes no sense."
And,
"Get me out of this class."
And,
"Mr. Lenz is a bad teacher, Mom. If I have to be in this class one more day, I'll die."
Keisha wanted out. Soon, Keisha's parents did not want John, Mr. Lenz, for their child as a teacher. Now, I have to tell you, if this was my child coming home and telling me the same things, I would have investigated and looked into it too. soon enough, I understood that it was not because of Mr. John Lenz or because of the school. It was because Keisha wanted to be with her best friend in another classroom down the hall. Sadly, it turned out that her parents understood what she was trying to do, too, and they went along with it. They supported her. None of these people had any idea of what made-up stories can do to a person's career. And to keep Keisha happy at home, they overreacted in the following ways. Both parents strongly and daily and sometimes hourly called, came in, showed up, requested to our new principal that year that Keisha be moved to her friend's classroom. Why? Because Mr. Lenz wasn't a good teacher. The new principal came in often to observe Mr. Lenz. Fair enough. Okay. And John Lenz noticed that there was not ever unhappiness or behavioral issues from Keisha while she was in the classroom. While she was in class, she laughed. But unknown to John, Keisha's parents began to make up untruths about him and about the school in order to accelerate this move my daughter process. After our new principal interviewed Keisha and the teacher, John, they both separately told the new principal the truth, that things were A-okay. The new principal that year chose not to give in to Keisha's parents. He figured out what was going on. He quickly realized that what was going on was not good for him, not good for Mr. Lenz, and not good for the school or community. And that they were being set up by a child and pushed by her parents. It turned out that Keisha's parents used this tactic each year so to get their child placed with her friends. Prior to this school year, the previous principal was approached by an attorney hired by Keisha's parents in order to get what their daughter desired. To avoid disturbances, to avoid slander, and prejudiced newspaper articles. The past principal quickly gave in and moved Keisha prior to attorneys getting involved. As for me, I was an observer of all this and it was very painful to watch. I only really found out about what was going down months after John shared the entire conundrum with me. All kinds of professional people became involved, as were canvassing and monitoring Mr. Lenz's classroom on a daily basis. Now, I knew how much John put into his classroom, a lot. Each year, despite the class he was given, John worked long hours to make sure his classroom was a great place to learn. The chaos continued for a couple of months. Keisha's parents, as adults, well, their behavior was aggressive, it was definitely overreactive, and helped to entitle their child. At the time, I can tell you, John did hate to lose a student because he liked his students and he was good to them and they were good to him. But understood that this was a diverse situation, so he felt that if Keisha chose to be moved and she was that unhappy, she should find a different environment. But the new principal stood firm with the litigious mom and dad. Being a teacher sometimes puts you in the line of fire when you have no idea anyone is even shooting at you. Metaphor. John Lenz was told by another parent that there was a lot of negative stories being gossiped around the neighborhood and after school at the soccer games and the little league games, etc., about him.
Nope. Good.
And that the office secretaries were beginning to help spread the mistruths.
True.
Oh boy. These parents, from the principal to the superintendent and the school board, and had an attorney write this all up, slandering my friend John. Their result would move their daughter to another classroom so she could be with her best friend. In the meantime, without knowing, John's past evaluations were being checked. Administrators were stopping by to check his program in the classroom. And it was all fine with John. He was most certainly a professional. I thought people were just doing walkthroughs of our school buildings because I didn't know what was happening. I thought, how come they're not coming through my room to look at my stuff? And sometimes I tried to pull them in. Hey, take a look at what we're doing in here.
Check this out.
No, they kept going into John's room. So I never even knew all this was going on in John's background. One September day, the litigious mom of Keisha appeared outside John's classroom after lunch, which was when John usually taught social studies and he helped kids with learning issues. Social studies was something that John loved to teach. Talked about history a lot. It was an amazing story to be told, John would say to me. And he was a master storyteller. Just across the hallway, I heard Keisha's mom, who stood about 3 feet outside John's classroom door. Keisha's mom openly cried loudly and sobbed for an entire afternoon. I'm not kidding. The students were very concerned, both my students and his. When I checked on her, she said to me,
I'm so unhappy because Mr. Lenz is just so bad at what he does.
By then, John was out in the hallway too, and John said,
huh, well, I thought I was kind of rocking it today. I thought I was doing well.
John did have a sense of humor. Then Keisha's mom said,
I'm so sad for your students. They don't deserve this.
John Lenz had taught for over 20 years, and he still loved what he did so very much. And it hurt me to see John's expression become so sad that day. John wondered,
was I that bad? Am I not seeing what she sees?
After school that day, John Lenz sat down with Keisha's mother in his classroom, and he really talked this out with her. He assured her, first of all, that he would never do anything to harm or make negative out of her daughter's learning experience. Her crying ceased as if someone had turned off a switch. With newfound confidence in Mr. Lenz, Keisha's mom must have felt a change because now she treated John as an ally of hers for some reason. Keisha's mom admitted to John,
Keisha wants to be in the other classroom to be with her best friend. They've been together for every year, thanks to me. But now, this new idiot of a principal told me no. My daughter's feelings are hurt. And it's her education. She should get what she wants. And it's my job as her mom to get her everything she wants.
John Lenz was flabbergasted that anyone had chosen to overreact to that degree. Just to be with a friend. It is great to spend a classroom school year with a good friend. Beside you, sometimes, usually at recess. But this was a bit too much. John had told her so. And to clarify things, John then repeated her words back to her. John said,
so I understand what you're saying. You want Keisha to be with her friend in the other classroom because she deserves it? And you promised Keisha you would make that happen?
Her mom said,
yes, and that's what she deserves. She deserves this.
John continued,
we can't always switch everyone around to be with their friends. There's going to be times in Keisha's life that won't always work perfectly for her, and you may not always be there. Is there a special need or maybe a counselor's screening that mandates that these two girls be together?
Keisha's mom answered,
Of course not. My daughter has never been to a counselor. Why would she?
Now Keisha's mom knew that Mr. Lenz understood the reality of what she was talking about. Since this situation had gone way beyond John's control, he needed to leave the results up to the administrators. It was in their hands now. And he explained that to Keisha's mom.
It's out of my hands now.
This was the moment she stopped slandering excellent teacher John Lenz and focused on harassing the new principal so badly that he did not return the next year. About 1 month passed, and October's skies brought more chilly weather and colorful leaves. Yet, with all that beauty, so many educators, lawyers, administrators, counselors, teachers, community members had been brought in to involve themselves in this Keisha issue that it just didn't seem fair, appropriate, or right. Finally, the day of the switch came. Before school, John had already moved Keisha's desk to the other classroom. I know that he looked forward to resuming a natural pace of a school year without all the drama and the introspection. I didn't think John expected to see Keisha that day, but he did. Keisha entered school with John's class, and she came to John's classroom. She wore a great big smile. Keisha said to Mr. Lenz,
I changed my mind. I want to stay here in this class. I like it here. I made new friends here. And I will miss all this if I move down the hall. Don't make me move down the hall, Mr. Lenz.
John was speechless. John was advised by our school principal, the new one. He said, John, let Keisha stay in your room then.
Just avoid the conflict, John. We know what will happen if her parents get involved again.
For me, it seemed like a very bumpy but a very happy ending for Mr. Lenz and Keisha. A better realized understanding of how time kind of helps all things. Keisha stayed. Overreacting and untruth so a parent and her daughter could have their way nearly destroyed the happiest version of educator John Lenz. Keisha was a product of the trophy generation. Every time she did something, she expected immediate results and immediate validation from other people. Utterly self-assured, but with no foundation in which to actually succeed in what she wanted to do. If there was an exam for self-esteem, Keisha would score 100%.
100%.
When the person that knows the least is given unlimited power over all situations, she can become the most self-confident and begin to be the superordinate, the controlling boss of everyone, including adults. To be fair, not all trophy generation kids behave this way, and their parents. But that school year, John really worked on critical thinking skills with his class, particularly for Keisha. So I watched and I got to witness Keisha turn a corner. She was a bright girl. She just needed more experience making reasoned judgments that were logical and well thought out. Keisha learned that it was okay to question conclusions, and it was okay to question arguments, but it was important to be truthful and see all sides of things. Think critically. But the damage had already been done. For the rest of John Lenz's time at that school, I saw that the community had an eye on him. The word was out that he was a bad teacher.
Did you hear about Mr. Lenz?
No good.
No good.
He's a bad teacher.
Nothing more than that. But that was enough. I came to his defense as often as I could. However, a year later, John Lenz left education. I do not know what happened to Keisha after that school year, but I expect that there may have been times life's realities hit her pretty hard. It's possible that overreacting can hurt other people. today's podcast kind of just exploded for me from the events of the past week, my week. I was at a parking lot. I just pulled into a parking space at a local animal hospital when a car next to me had pulled in, and they opened their passenger door into my driver's side mirror where I was sitting. It wasn't hard, but I felt the jolt, and I knew I needed to check it. So just as I was turning off my car, the man who had accidentally dinged my mirror appeared, and he was an older man in his late 60s or 70s, and he had kind of a slight build and wispy hair, and he was older.
It's okay.
He took a look at my vehicle, and he quickly began to walk away.
It's okay.
I called for him to hold on for a minute. Wait.
Why?
Okay, I said, but come back so we can go over and look at this together, just in case, I said. I figured we all have insurance, so we need to do this right. But with that, the man appeared again, but this time he was angry. I could see it on his face, and he was coming toward me.
Okay, you...
And he put his fists up.
Lose it.
You piece of sh-. Let's go. Let's go. Come on, right now.
And he yelled, and he brought his fists up to his face and his chest. I was startled. You know, I'm not a small guy. I'm not a big guy, but I was just startled by this whole thing. I didn't want or I didn't expect this kind of response. So I was in full alert mode. Someone was threatening me and had their fists up. I paused for just a second, and I saw something that I had not seen in this man prior to this. When I looked in his face, there was this terrible look of pain and sadness on his face. It was deep-seated inside of him, and I felt perhaps he was having a bad day, a bad week, a bad year, I don't know. Regardless, this overreaction had very little to do with him dinging my mirror. It was just the thing, the straw that broke the camel's back for him that day. Once again, with his fists up, he called me a piece of... I quickly glanced to see that there really was no scratch or dent in my car, just like he said. Now, as a teacher, a retired teacher, in education, we learn to de-escalate conflicts. We don't build conflicts. So the next thing that blurted out of my mouth was the truth and totally improvised by accident. I said, "Sir, I think you and I are alike. We're very much alike. We have a passion for our cars. We want to do the best that we can in life. And you know what? Look, you're right. There seems to be no damage. So I think we're all okay." I extended my hand. Now, this was back when you could actually shake somebody's hand before it was too germy to do so. I did watch as the sad look on his face changed. It morphed into this one of relief and almost kindness. We separated without incident. He went his way. I went mine. So the next time someone overreacts to something, keep it in mind that they just might be having a bad day. And you can make it a better one for them.
De-escalate. Lessen the torque.
For Life's Learning Curve, stay safe out there. I'm Paul Hart. Life's Learning Curve podcast is put together by producer Paul Hart with assistance by Linda Burke, Steve Hagen, and Sebastian T. Dogg. We're mixed by Heidi Cerner, technical director Hal McDonald. As always, music and audio assistance by Riley Hart. Our podcast content and voice replication is intended for entertainment purposes only. On today's show, special thanks to John Lenz and Michelle O'Connor. Please check out our website, lifeslearningcurve.org, and leave a comment. But please do subscribe while you're there. We'd love to add you. As always, find us on Facebook, Instagram. Listen to us almost everywhere podcasts are heard. I'm Paul Hart, and we will be back soon with more from Life's Learning Curve.